Welcome to the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Justin Rogers, joined by Will Birchfield, as always, for the midweek edition. And I don't know, we got a game apparently this week.
What are we talking about today?
It's a great question, Will. I'm struggling. You'd think we do prep for the show, but we do not. We do zero. We do zero prep for the interviews in the middle. We do zero prep for the show. We just kind of fly by the seat of our pants because that's how we do things around here. But it is the midway point of the season, Will. Not that there is an official midway and a 17-game schedule. Right. I guess the midway point was the halftime speeches that the Lions coaches were giving when they were getting their butts kicked in Houston. But look, this team is 8-1. I imagine that they are everywhere they could want to be right now. The offense is clicking. The defense is clicking. The special teams is maybe the best unit of them all comparatively to the rest of the league somehow. Is there anything that surprises you about this team at the 54.3% part of the season?
Well, so technically, the halfway point will be after this Sunday's game against the Jags, when the Lions will have played 10 games, because as Dan Campbell said this week, they have 11 games left, including, of course, three playoff games after the first round bye, which brings them to 20 games total on this season, all in, Super Bowl included. And look, he said it in passing when he was asked about resting Za'Darius Smith, and if you just clip those words, it sure sounds like he's guaranteeing a Super Bowl appearance. But it does speak to the laser focus that this team and this coaching staff has on the end goal. And Dan Campbell has been about this since he arrived here. He said he learned under Sean Payton to always work backward, identify the goal at the beginning of the year, visualize it, talk about it, figure out what needs to be done to get there, and then work backwards. And so for them, it's a 20-game season. And so after Sunday, they'll be halfway through their season as they see it playing out.
He hits all the right buttons with this fan base. Love I mean, it. They want a coach that embraces the past and takes accountability for stuff that's not their fault. He's always done that. He clearly doesn't shy away from talking about the Super Bowl, which I actually really appreciate, right? Like he embraces the moments for what they are. Did it last year with winning the division title and the playoff games. Like he wanted them to feel not the stress, but the moment, right? I do wonder now, thinking back to the whole enchilada comment, if that was him visualizing his post-game meal down in New Orleans. I don't know. I don't know how.
He's in po' boy, right?
God, there's so many good options in New Orleans. We could do an entire podcast on that for sure.
Yeah, he definitely has some good hideouts down there after spending 5 years on that coaching staff.
Yeah, well, we got our good buddy Josh Katzenstein down there that will carry the day for us if we are fortunate enough to go there. And look, I might just go down there anyway. I adore New Orleans, one of my favorite, if not my favorite city in America, certainly my favorite city on the NFL slate.
Yeah, I hit up Mardi Gras for a few nights in college.
Of course you did.
And I think after three nights, I was fulfilled. I think I was ready to go home. Got my money's worth over what was that, 72 hours on Bourbon Street.
Your money's worth how many dollars were the beads there, Will? Great. So there was a football question in there somewhere.
That's right. What has surprised me, if anything, about this season so far? You know what? I honestly don't know if anything shocks me through nine games. I'll say this. I've been really impressed at how the defense has held up in the wake of some serious attrition. I mean, if you had told me back in September that they would lose in the first five games of the season, Marcus Davenport, Derek Barnes, and Aiden Hutchinson, among many others, but those three in particular, who seemed and were vital pieces, the front seven, I would have said, ooh, that defense is going to seriously struggle to get after the passer and even to stop the run, because those three guys play pivotal roles, as we've discussed here before, in setting edges. And I would have been covering my eyes to look at the defensive numbers, knowing those losses through nine games, and that you look at the defense, and here they are as a top 10 scoring defense in the NFL. And it's really a tribute to Aaron Glenn, who, speaking of New Orleans, sure as heck might be destined there next season. We can get into that maybe later, but the way he has schemed to the personnel at his disposal, and the way that players have stepped up in the back end has been extremely impressive. You know, I entered the season wondering if they had enough pass rush, and they've lost, you could argue, their three best pass rushers on the edges, and they're still finding a way to get it done. That's what surprises me most so far.
Yeah, it's remarable. I don't know what other way to put it, right? Like, I think you were looking for the defense to take a step forward this year. You have at least some level of patience for that with the new pieces getting integrated. You want to see it kind of coming together late, and, you know, whatever metric you want to use, right? The PFF ranks them as the number one defense, maybe overall, number two, one of those. DVOA, which is like a kind of a down-by-down, really deep dive metric, has the Lions at number three overall. And to do that, missing Hutchinson for essentially half the season, and really kind of an absolute gauntlet here with the three road games against Minnesota, yeah, who nobody knew was going to be as good as they were, but were undefeated at the time, and you know, certainly was a tooth and nail battle there. Green Bay, in not just Green Bay, but the conditions in Green Bay, and then Houston, which maybe hasn't been as good, but that was a 6-3 football team, and they came with the energy you'd love to see teams come with when they host a primetime game. I made this comp to Stoney Sunday night. It felt like those early reward primetime games for the Lions last year when they were turning the corner, mm-hmm, and just the excitement of the fan base, the excitement of the roster, to withstand all three of those punches and to emerge victorious in all four games, really. And the Titans were in there as well, is, it's just crazy, and they did a lot of that on the back of this defense that's been patchwork with practice squatters and, mm-hmm, you know, guys. I mean, Trevor Nowoski didn't play a defensive snap until he did, yeah, right? And he's making contributions. They were, you know, running out Elkhuddin Muhammad there for a minute, Isaiah Thomas off the 1998 Dream Team or whatever, Pan Am games. And so to hold it together with, you know, seemingly, you know, twigs and glue at some spots was impressive. And now we get to see, you know, some of the benefits of the moves they made, right? Like, Josh Pascal's back, and Pascal's been a really quiet, understated improvement story, but you add Za'Darius Smith to the mix, and Campbell tempered our expectations, outside expectations, fans' expectations today by saying it's about elevating everybody around him and just doing his job. You know, it's not about the stats, but it's really difficult not to be intrigued, excited about, you know, what kind of fit he is as the missing piece post Hutchinson breaking his leg.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you look at this defensive line, and despite all those losses, to extend your metaphor, there also are some branches and some like legitimate trunks on this defensive line. I mean, Aleem McNeil is growing into like a near all pro level player. I know we discussed him last week, so we don't have to get back into it now, but between Aleem and Levi and Reeder, and then Pascal and the addition of Smith on the edges, that's still a pretty darn good unit. And
for sure,
it's missing, obviously, it's two biggest playmakers against the pass, and you could say three with Barnes, but that's still a unit that they got to feel pretty good about, especially considering how well the units behind them have played. Obviously, the secondary is speaking more and more for itself, but those linebackers just keep on doing their thing. And we talked to Anzalone, and you guys will hear that interview later on in this podcast. And
not about football at all. About
football, but it's worth noting that Anzalone continues to be, even though he's a team captain and one of the longest tenured players, and almost always the leading tackler, the unsung hero of this defense, maybe because he just so consistently and steadily does his job that it almost goes unnoticed. But a lot of credit is due to him and Jack Campbell as a duo, just like holding down the middle of this defense. And without those two guys, the rest of it might begin to crumble. But they really have put players in the right spots. And without Hutchinson and Davenport on the edges to win one-on-one, I think Glenn has done a nice job of running more games and more stunts, especially on the interior. You know, Aleem is so athletic that he can do things like that in conjunction with linebackers. Like, you'll see him run stunts with Rodriguez when he was healthy, with Anzalone at times. And you'll see him sending more and more defensive back safeties on blitzes. I mean, Kirby's pick six was the result of a blitz that, as Brian Branch will tell you, should have been his. But I think the losses have allowed AG to be even more creative with his defense, and I think he relishes that in some ways. We know AG takes everything personally, kind of in the same way that St. Brown does, and I think when he lost his best defensive player and two more starting pieces, he was like, all right, hell yeah. Everyone's going to doubt this defense now. I get to cook it up now and show you what I can do. And we were talking with Anzalone, and I referenced the fact that last year, AG, you know, I think he was the number one coach in that players poll that other players would most want to play for. And at the time,
number one coordinator. Yep.
Number one coordinator. Correct. And at the time, you know, just based on some of the numbers for 2.5 seasons, it was maybe I don't want to say a head scratcher, but it was a little bit puzzling. But what we're seeing this year, between his obvious leadership skills, his obvious ability to connect with players, having been a Pro Bowl player himself, and now his schematic vision, why exactly he ranks so highly among players in this league. And I'll set it before and I'll say it again. I think he's a head coach next season.
Yeah, it feels like the one thing, and it's sounds stupid and obvious, but the one thing that was holding him back from being a head coach sooner was the statistical results of his defense.
I totally agree.
And look, I've said it in this way. You know, he has the it factor. He has, I think, the ability to be a face of a franchise, but it's really hard to sell your fan base on a hire that just finished with the 22nd defense in the NFL. Like, it's just a hard sell. Yeah, and no matter how much you sell individual improvement of the players, the ultimate result is what your fan base is going to point to, because, you know, not every small percentage of your fans are into the nitty gritty. Most of them are surface level, and that's the numbers, the scoring numbers and the yardage numbers they're going to see. And so to get the results he's having this year and to do it without Hutchinson just only adds to the resume. And it's going to be really tough for teams, you know, in the cycle who, you know, however many there are, 5, 6, 7, 8, to ignore the credentials. I don't know if it's the Saints' job. I mean, clearly there's a lot of connections down there, and it makes a lot of sense. But he's going to take, I think, the job offered to him just because he's been waiting so long. And,
yeah.
But that's not a great situation down there. I don't know. Do you want the job where it's going to take you 3 years to dig out of a hole before
AG might?
Maybe. Yeah.
You know, you're right. That's why Dan Campbell came here. He wanted the challenging job. It was also the job that was offered to him. It wasn't like he turned down other opportunities, but he spoke from the very beginning about relishing the chance to build the Lions into a contender, having played here in the past. And AG has the coaching connections to New Orleans, and I think he would embrace that challenge down there. I think, you know, he's obviously has the ties to ownership, and he's familiar with the area. I think he would look at that as another opportunity just to prove to himself and to the NFL what a great leader he can be.
That's a really, really strong point. And there's the Po' Boys too. Like, that's a lure for
maybe for just about anyone. Selling point of all.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to gloss over Carlton Davis, but I don't know what else needs to be said. I mean, he's playing at such a great level. It was an absolute great move by Brad Holmes. He's going for Executive of the Year, second year in a row, I think. It's one of the best moves he's made as a GM, period, really. I mean, obviously, we talk about his draft record, and it speaks for itself, but one of the better veterans, along with David Montgomery, that he's added to this roster, really kind of changed the landscape of a problem on the roster.
Can I ask you a question on him? Because I remember, I think at the quarter point of the season, we did kind of stock up, stock down on pending free agents. And I think at the time you said kind of stock level on Carlton. I think I said that if the season ended at that time, which again, it didn't, I thought they would re-sign him just because they liked the physicality and attitude that he played with through four games. I'll ask you now, if the season ended tomorrow, do you think they bring Carlton Davis back on a new contract next season?
I have to imagine stylistically, leadership-wise, all that, that they would love to bring him back. I still question how the dollars work. And, yeah. And I wrote that, you know, this week in my three and out column, like that was the lead point. It's like, you know, I know the math is complicated. It's a little difficult for me sometimes to think beyond the maybe this year or the next year. It's 2026 where it starts getting dicey, you know, with all those bigger numbers coming in, but like find a way. Yeah. You know, he fits what you need. He's a great balance to Tarion on and off the field.
Yeah.
You know, just he dropped a really funny line in a conversation on unrelated topic this week. I was talking about something about managing egos in a locker room. He's like, there's not a lot of egos. Yeah, Tarion's got one. It's just, you know, the playful jabs there. But like, it's good to have that guy to keep him in check and to kind of be that vet leader for him. So I think it would be really smart. I still think Davis is probably tracking toward a contract that's going to pay him in the ballpark of $20 million a year.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But I look at another team like San Francisco that has all these big contracts as well, and I saw they just signed a cornerback. Forgive me for forgetting which one, but for, you know, 4 years, $90 million. So they keep finding the money. So it's not my job. It's Mike Disner and Brad Holmes' job. And if I was them, I would definitely find a way to keep Carlton Davis because he has been a really special fit here. I did want to flip really quickly the offense and just talk about what surprised me. And it's kind of the opposite, I guess. You get to expect these players to be achieving certain things and led by no other than Amon Ross St. Brown.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's a guy that every single year of his career, the production's gone up and up and up. And we saw him all through training camp. And what do we say? Oh my God, this guy's going to,
yeah, he's
going to catch 150 balls.
Passes.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reality is right now he's on pace for fewer than 1,000 yards. And that's wild to me.
Is, yeah.
And Sam
yeah.
Laporta's percentage of production is down something like 20-25%. And you're like, well, where the hell's it all going? And yeah, some of it's going to JMO. No question, but it's how much they're leading on their backfield. And it's how do you find flaw in it, right? Like
yep.
those two running backs are awesome. They're running the ball at a really high clip. They're now way more involved in the passing game. I pointed out to Scotty Montgomery today that they're at 90% of their receiving production from last year through nine games. Like,
wow,
that is where it's all going. It's those yeah. guys. They're on pace for like 3,100 yards from scrimmage. And so, you know, bummer for Amon-Ra, but you're 8-1. What do you have to complain about?
Yeah, and he's still living up to every single dollar that the Lions invested in him this offseason. I thought it was interesting that Dan Campbell went out of his way on his radio interview this week to highlight St. Brown. The coaches are well aware that St. Brown sets extremely high personal goals for himself every year. Last year it was 10 touchdowns and 1,500 yards and 150 catches, which, by the way, would have been the NFL record. And he achieved two of those on the last game of the season. And I assure you that they are higher this year. And the coaches know that he's, yeah, it's sensitive, but he's serious about that stuff. And I'm sure part of him is discouraged on a personal level that he hasn't lived up, not to anyone else's expectations, but his own this year. And so Dan Campbell, after a game in which St. Brown has, oh, by the way, a touchdown for the seventh straight game and blocks his ass off for like the 75th straight game, make sure, without being asked about him, just to talk about how well he has played and how much he means to this team. You see, I love St. because when it's go time and we need plays and we need a player to step up, I know that he's going to press in the right way to help us win that game. And you did feel him come alive in the fourth quarter. I mean, there was obviously the touchdown on that little screen play where St. Brown just wiggled his way through, really well blocked by Penei Sewell and others. Surprise, surprise. And then, of course, the most golf St. Brown play of all time to set up Jake Bates' game-winning touchdown, where I think Orlovsky had a really great breakdown of this on Twitter, talking about how the Lions set up in a bunch formation to identify the Texans defense. And then they separated those receivers. And as Jared Goff said this week, you know, Amon-Ra against that zone defense has basically three different ways that he can run that route. And he doesn't decide until the ball is snapped and he assesses the defense. And he doesn't alert Jared to this, and Jared doesn't alert Amon-Ra in any which way, but they are so often, as in always, on the same page that Jared knew that based on what St. Brown saw, he was going to run the route and find that soft spot in the zone. St. Brown runs it. Jared puts it on him. They catch it. They win the game, you know, a minute later. And, Dan Campbell wanted to make sure that it was publicly clear how much the Lions appreciate Amon-Ra St. Brown, because yeah, the numbers might be down, but like the effect on the game, the impact on his team, I would argue is as high as ever. And I also wonder, like, it sure feels like through nine games, the Lions have run fewer offensive plays than last year, just based on circumstance. I mean, the Titans game for one, the Packers game for another, great special teams and a turnover happy defense ultimately does take away opportunities in a good way for the offense. Like when you're so often set up in plus territory because you've got good punt or kick returns, or you're turning the ball over in plus territory, there's only so many yards to be gained for an offense. And I wonder if that has put somewhat of a lid on St. Brown's numbers in particular, because so often St. Brown will have like five catches for 64 yards on a single drive, you know, that begins at like the negative 20. And I don't know if the Lions have had the same number of opportunities this year in that regard as they had last year. Maybe something to look at.
No, you're definitely right. It's been a couple weeks, but at one point they're averaging like 58 plays per game. I think last year it was 67. And, you know, not just the factors you were talking about. Again, it goes back to running the football, right? You run the football, the clock runs. Yep. And so when you're running it more, you know, that's just the course of nature. At that point, you're using more clock to execute that style of offense. You just have fewer plays. And so if you want more plays, you have to commit to throwing. Well, they tried that one game against Tampa Bay and you guys hated it. And for good reason, right? They lost. So this is your team now, and I think you embrace it because it's 8-1 and it's on a Super Bowl track. Remember that time we didn't think we'd have anything to talk about? We're doing great. Well, we're already over 20 minutes. And we might as well just kick it over to this interview and keep this thing moving. I'm just going to set the table and be honest with them. Look, we walk into the locker room on Wednesday, and Wednesday's a little bit of a weird day. There's it's not a great flow of starters in there for the first half of locker room. A lot of practice squad guys or backups that don't play. And it doesn't, but we could go in there with a plan. It wouldn't matter. The odds of, we wanted to talk to Tim Patrick for a month. And by the time we did, we'd forgot we wanted to talk to him. Yeah. But we just take whoever pops in and just make these things up on the fly. And I don't know, kind of proud of how these interviews end up.
Yeah, they're fun.
They turn out well. The balance is good.
Yeah, I think I was writing down questions in my notepad to ask Anzalone as we were talking to Anzalone. I mean, that was the level of preparation that went into it. But it was a fun, free-flowing, kind of banterous interview. Banterous, fun, good word. I think I made that one up.
Fun and free-flowing like the man's hair.
Yay, boom.
And that is where we kick things off with Anzalone's hair. You can hear that locker room interview coming up after the break. And you're back with the Detroit Football Network podcast. You're going to hop right into that locker room interview with Alex Anzalone with Will Birchfield and I.
We're going to start off with an important one. Do you and your wife share the same hair care products?
Yeah, she uses leave-in conditioner, but I do not. But shampoo and conditioner, we use the same.
What's the decision that goes into whether leaving it in or not? I don't know these things.
I just feel like it wouldn't be mainly of me to use it, so like use it maybe after a game. I use a detangler or something every now and again, but no, leave it for me.
It saves money though. I can relate. Back in my long hair days, like my wife and I always shared shampoo, conditioner, Garnier Fruit Kiss. That's the good stuff.
I'm not gonna give out my secrets, but we don't veer off too much into the feminine hair products. It's pretty gender neutral.
How long have you had the long hair? When did it become your staple?
Probably my junior year of college, but it got really long like my senior year of college and rookie year of NFL.
And it's been that, like, those flowing locks ever since. Like, you never cut it down to, like, college.
Yeah, right now, yeah. I started at a buzz cut, too. I was never a long-haired guy.
Yeah.
So,
it's your look now.
Yeah. I was curious. I'd forgotten you were a fullback in high school.
Running back.
Running back.
Yeah.
Were you a little jealous, though, when Malcolm got the call over you fill in?
No. I don't want any smoke in regard to a fullback position. Really? Yeah, no. He's made for that position. He's short. He's in stature. You can get under blocks. No. I can play running back.
Yeah.
But not fullback.
Do you think Ben Johnson would probably have something creative for you, don't you think?
I mean, he could, but not at this point. I can confirm.
We were hunting for questions for this in the locker room, and one of your teammates wants to know who your best friend is, not on the roster, but in life.
Oh, in life. Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, so much of my life is wrapped up in this football world, obviously.
It can be an overlap.
Yeah, Derek and Jalen are probably best friends right now in life. But I'm trying to think outside of that. Obviously, you know, you kind of go home and you have your friend groups and stuff like that. But Derek's been coming to Tampa, too, to train with me. So
Well, that's the correct answer, because we asked Derek, and he was like, he better save me.
Yeah,
if
right.
If he doesn't, come back and tell me, and I'm coming on next week. That's
funny. I feel like he's going to not deal well with splitting the honors with Jalen, though. I mean, it seems like he's got to get sensitive.
I mean, part of that's on him. It's a two-way street.
He gets hurt and he just disappears.
He disappeared, yeah.
Hey, you wrote last year in the Players Tribune that awesome piece about playing here and loving the city. You also referenced that your son, Cooper, had been making many trips to the principal's office for tackling his team or his classmates. Have you got a lid on that? Or is he still tackling his classmates like that on the football field?
There's part that you kind of want to keep that in him a little bit. But, no, I think that Every year he has a different challenge, but no, he's, as far as the straight up tackling, that's over with for now.
Yeah, but it's form tackling, right? I mean, as long as he's tackling fundamentally, you have to improve,
good.
Right?
It's all good.
It's, I mean, it's interesting. I think guys are split on it. I mean, do you want Cooper to play football if he wants to when he gets older?
In like high school and things like that. As far as like when to start tackle football and stuff like that, I mean, I don't plan on doing it young at all. But, you know, it's kind of – you get to that – I feel like you'll probably know – you'll know when the right time is. It's just – but, yeah, I don't think that I'm going to keep – I'm going to be able to keep him away from it, to be honest.
Besides you, who's his favorite player on this team?
I'm trying to think. He likes Jared.
Is he champ?
No, he doesn't do that champ. No.
You wouldn't allow that.
No, he's not going to chant another man's name in my household. he calls Derek Uncle D, so probably Uncle D is probably one. I just know he knows who Jared is, so
yeah.
I think it's probably two.
Who was your favorite player growing up? Like, who was the guy that you wanted to be like as a kid?
It was a running back, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I was a big Ricky Williams fan, believe it or not. Besides the weed smoking and all that.
Unrelated to the long hair is what you're saying.
Right, very unrelated. I was a big Ricky Williams fan. Trying to think. I grew up an Eagles fan, so Brian Westbrook and that whole crew.
Yeah.
You know, anything Eagles I was about.
So. Yeah.
When did you make the switch? Do you play linebacker as well in high school?
Or both. I'll stay in both.
Okay.
Yeah.
And lacrosse, too, right? Weren't you all state lacrosse also?
Yeah. I had offers to play offense in college. Like, Florida asked me if I wanted to play offense or defense. Alabama only wanted me to play tight end. It was kind of – my offensive film was probably better in high school than my defensive.
So why linebacker then?
I just feel like it was probably more opportunity for me as far as getting to the next level. You know, the more roster spots. I don't know. I just feel like the general consensus was linebacker, and there were a few stray offs as far as offense. But so I just kind of trusted that.
Was it tempting to consider playing tight end though for Nick Saban in Alabama? I mean, that's a pretty glamorous offer.
Yeah, right? It was interesting. But to be honest, I was never really considering it. It wasn't up to the academic standards in my household. So yeah.
Speaking of, I mean, is your dad disappointed you didn't go into medicine?
Well, yeah. I always say I'm the black sheep of my family because both my brothers are. One's a cardiologist and one's a hospitalist. My dad's a pediatrician, so I'm the black sheep of the family and probably the only person in the NFL to have a disappointed dad.
But who's got the bigger house, Alex?
Yeah, right. Or not as much medical, or no debt, no medical school debt.
There was a players poll last year where Aaron Glenn was named like the coach that most players want to play for on other teams. You played for him now for, I think, eight seasons of your career in the NFL. What makes him so fun to play for?
I think just the – first of all, he's a natural born leader. I think that, he takes control of a room, but also he's super relatable, always positive, knows when to hold people accountable, knows when to, maybe do an easier message on someone that needs help. And I think that just goes a long way with players. And he's been there, done that. He played whatever it is, 14, 15 years in the NFL and Pro Bowler player. And I think people respect that.
Did you appreciate the memes of his glasses?
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, I loved it. It was hilarious. Yeah. He always wears the same thing in cold weather games, too.
Has he changed at all from your New Orleans days? Anything different about him Dan, for that matter?
Yeah, not really. I think that they're all that's the thing is like they're both too genuinely they're who they are. Yeah. They're not going to deviate from that no matter what circumstance or what position they're in.
Let me close with this. You came here in 2021. You saw the bottom for what this roster was, what this team was. It's now on the up and up and a legit Super Bowl contender. When did you know it was turning around?
I think. The biggest game that you could probably point to is in 2022, the Green Bay game, the last game of the season. I think that's probably the one pivotal moment that you can put. But winning 8 out of the last 10 was big, too. So I think that's really when the momentum started, in my opinion, and we just kept adding pieces and drafting, you know what I mean? And it's kind of just been working out, but it's like a freight train that – kind of can't be stopped right now.
Last one for me. Why not pro lacrosse? Did you ever get
no money? There's no money in it.
Get my kids in private school. Yeah.
Nobody thinks that Alex is a special teamer, but this man has to get to a special teams meeting, on the three snaps he'll play a year. Thanks, Alex.
Appreciate you.
And that was Detroit Lions captain, linebacker, former, not fullback, running back, Will. Alex. Yeah. Anzalone, and like I said, I thought we did pretty good there for making up questions on the spot.
Yeah, we had some misinformation about his role as a fullback, so someone needs to go correct the internet on that.
I think I might have pulled that from Florida's site, so he can take it up with they probably need a bigger donation.
Yeah,
maybe need to get that weight room named the Alex Anzalone Tim Tebow weight room. I don't know.
How about Nick Saban recruiting him to play tight end, and he never even played tight end in any capacity?
it's ridiculous. I mean, college recruiting's so ridiculous. I don't know. It makes me want to pick up a video game system and get the NCAA 25, and then I remember that I have no free time. None. You've got a kid. I've got a baby in the form of a company. So no free time for
and
these
you're the
guys.
And you're the one breastfeeding it.
this is actually true. That's a little known fact. We're gonna take another quick break here. We'll pop back, and I guess we'll talk about the Jaguars, or in some way, shape, or form, we'll talk about them.
Yeah.
This is the Detroit Football Network podcast. All right, we're back with the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Justin Rogers, Will Birchfield. Will, we've talked about the halfway point of the season. We talked about Alex Andalone's hair and disappointing his father for not being a doctor. I guess we've delayed the inevitable long enough. The Jacksonville Jaguars are coming to town. And I don't know if you knew this. They are currently slated to pick number one in the 2025 draft. And here's where I'm going to set the table with this, Will, because I find it really interesting. And maybe it was a little forced the last time they came to town in 2022. But the narrative kind of going into that matchup, the questions going to that matchup were the franchises kind of mirroring themselves as the AFC, NFC team on the rise, young, figuring out, good coach. And then the Detroit Lions went and pants them at Ford Field. I don't know what 40-14. It was brutal.
Yeah, they didn't punt that day, if I recall correctly.
And I think the funniest part about that game is we talk about this Honolulu flu now, right? Like this inability to get over the hangover of playing the Lions the next week. No, that was not the case then. Jaguars go on to win five games, they pull off one of the greatest comebacks in NFL playoff history, against the Chargers, nonetheless. So maybe less impressive than and you know, they didn't beat the Chiefs, but they certainly didn't roll over against the eventual Super Bowl champs. And so you did think that that's a franchise on the rise. And you look at the roster, there's some good young players. They've made some free agency moves that you look at and you go, it's not bad. I kind of see what they're going for. And man, it just has not worked. And to me, I guess I've seen this so many times where you think a franchise is heading in the right direction and there's no sustainability. And, you know, certainly the fear here at some level is that, is this sustainable? And, you know, we all talk about it like it is, but how realistic is it that in 2-3 years that the Lions are still, you know, on top? They're on the Steelers, Packers, Patriots trajectory versus whatever the hell Jacksonville just did.
Yeah, I think it's more likely that they'll continue on their current trajectory than just suddenly bottom out. You know, it's crazy that Jaguars came here for joint practices ahead of last season. And at the time, there was a legitimate debate to be had about basically which franchise you would rather have, like which team looked to be on more stable ground in the present and both moving forward. And you could argue pretty convincingly at the time that despite the Lions' great run to end 2022, that with a young premium quarterback in Trevor Lawrence and an offense full of weapons. I mean, they had just signed Calvin Ridley. They had Christian Kirk. I think Zay Jones seemed like
they spent a lot on receiver that year.
Boys for a big year, and obviously ETN, and they had some nice pieces on defense, headlined by Trayvon Walker. Like, yeah, that was, you know, yes, Lions are a great team, but man, I think if there was one young team to be envious of, maybe it was the Jaguars. And Lawrence was coming off his breakout season, a Pro Bowl year in 2022, really nice numbers all the way around. A year and a half later, that franchise has fallen apart and sure seems like Doug Peterson is on thinner than thin ice, basically just water slush at this point. I can't believe that he'd be back for another year. The inability of the Jaguars to maximize the talent of Lawrence and to put a competitive defense on the field is pretty staggering, because man, it sure seemed like 18 months ago they were set up for a long run of success in what looked like a pretty weak AFC South.
I think if you're looking for cause for concern in a parallel to the Lions, it's the fact that they went out and they changed defensive coordinators. They did it by choice as opposed to their defensive coordinator leaving for a head coaching position or any coordinator. And they went out and they signed Ryan Nielsen, who, you know, was a pretty hot commodity there for a while. If I remember correctly, New Orleans wouldn't initially let him out of his contract after he had a really good year as first year's coordinator there. Goes on to the Falcons and you know, puts up some respectable numbers. And you're thinking, okay, this is a really good hire. And I will tell you right now, I don't follow the Jaguars closely. They're in that AFC sphere that you don't see them a whole lot. Yeah. But you know, I don't know if this is a case where his scheme didn't fit the personnel and they knew they were going to take some lumps, but you know, the threat constantly looms that Aaron Glenn is going to leave, as we talked about, that Ben Johnson, you know, may find the perfect opportunity, particularly if the Lions do win a Super Bowl. Like, is that the impetus for him to leave? That he's accomplished all he can here and he's ready to take that next step. And so you have people ask me all the time, like, what happens when Ben Johnson leaves? Like, does this thing fall apart? And we don't know. We don't. We think that Campbell's got a really good grasp on it. We know he's got his fingerprints all over the offense, but we don't know if the next play caller has the full acumen of Ben Johnson. We don't know if the next guy to step in for Aaron Glenn is able to connect with the players in the same way. And so we saw this in Philadelphia too, right? Like, Super Bowl, both their coordinators leave and they take a pretty massive step back. And so, you know, it is cause for concern or something to ponder that's looming and ominous, and you don't have to worry about it right now, but at some point success brings change and opportunities to go elsewhere, whether that's free agency dollars, right? You pay the Super Bowl tax for all your players. You start losing players a little bit higher rate. And so sustainability is really, really difficult in this league. And I think that's the challenge that, you know, looms on the horizon for the Lions as they chase this new golden era of Lions football.
Yeah, I think the starkest difference in the way these teams have progressed on defense, regressed in the case of the Jaguars, is the ability to stop the pass. And this is a passing league, as we're all well aware. And I was just doing a little bit of research today.
Is this best versus worst, by the way?
It is. This is best versus worst in terms of passer rating allowed. The Lions have allowed an NFL low passer rating of, I think it was like 76.5, which for practical terms is the passer rating equivalent of Jacoby Brissett this season. So they're turning, turning opposing offenses into
Where is Jacoby Brissett?
He's with the Patriots. He was pseudo starter. And then kind of overtook him. I think he's probably going to end up playing a few more games this year. But the Lions have made opposing quarterbacks look like Jacoby Brissett. The Jaguars have allowed the highest pass rating at 106.2. The closest The closest comp for that is Mahomes' most recent MVP season was like 105.7.
Wow, I thought you were gonna go with Jared Goff.
I know. It doesn't resonate the same. I mean, we know Jared Goff's a good quarterback, but it's much more dramatic to say that the Jaguars are making opposing quarterbacks look like the MVP version of Patrick Mahomes, and they are. And you know, it's a worthwhile comparison because last I looked, anyways, the Jaguars were playing close to as much man coverage as the Lions and just simply don't have the personnel to do it. Now maybe that's a lack of a pass rush. Maybe there's more that goes into it than just struggling defensive backs. But the trio here in Amik and Terrion and Carlton look more and more equipped to play in that man coverage role. Terrion obviously still growing, but the trio in Jacksonville hasn't, and they've given up like some, I think it was like a 70% completion percentage in man coverage. They're their top three defensive backs. And as you referenced, you know, that could be an issue of forcing players into a scheme that doesn't fit them. And that's the exact opposite of what this coaching staff, Aaron Glenn included, do so well here, is working with the pieces they have to find a scheme that fits them. Now, they also brought those guys in knowing that they wanted to play more man. I mean, that's man coverage is the embodiment of Aaron Glenn in a defense. And so they went out and got guys that could do that. And now they're playing well as a result. But yeah, on Sunday, we're going to see MVP Mahomes versus Jacoby Brissett. And I like the Lions' chances in that game.
I definitely went and looked at other quarterbacks in that range this year. And it's just a great cast.
Follow me here.
You got Mason Rudolph. You got Aiden O'Connell. You got Skylar Thompson. Tyler Huntley. It's Daniel Jones and Deshaun Watson are better than what the Lions are allowing. So that
says it all right there.
It's really remarkable. And look at all those interceptions, certainly keep a quarterback rating down, but it's not like any of those interceptions are weird, fluky tip balls. I mean, these guys are making plays. The secondary is living up to its billing, and certainly the safeties. I don't know if you heard that Brian Branch guy.
Yeah, he's all right.
Super good.
He's all right.
Every time I watch the film, like it's preposterous how good he is. All right, you're going to hear the full extent of our prep today. And I gave Will a warning that I was going to ask him this question.
You did.
This is the one thing we prepped for. And we didn't even talk about it. I told him I was going to ask him. You are starting a blank expansion franchise today from scratch. And just the way the snake draft works, you have the option of drafting Jared Goff or Trevor Lawrence. which way are you going, Will?
When you asked me, you included that they were on their current contracts. Does that stipulation stand?
Yeah. We'll do that.
Okay.
You're going to pay him the going rate anyway. It's going to be that anyway.
Sure. I'm taking Jared Goff. And I'm taking Jared Goff because despite the fact that he's 5 years older and making about the same money as Lawrence per year, he has proven production in the NFL, and Lawrence doesn't, besides one strong but not spectacular season in 2022. And if you had asked me this question when Lawrence was the consensus one overall pick back in 2021, I wouldn't have hesitated to take Lawrence, even though Goff has played so well here. Like, if it was 2024 version of Goff versus 2021 coming out of Clemson, Lawrence, I wouldn't have batted an eye and taken Lawrence. But over 4 years in the NFL, the thing that he has done best is throw interceptions. And that's troubling. I mean, he has the third most interceptions in the NFL over his career. And the only two that have more might surprise you, but just consider some context that goes with it. So Lawrence has thrown 45 interceptions since he entered in 2021.
Yeah.
Mahomes has thrown 48 and Allen has thrown 51. But those two guys have also thrown 117 touchdowns each. Lawrence has thrown 69 touchdowns to 45 interceptions over 3.5 years is just not a ratio that screams to me franchise quarterback. And that's with a lot of good receivers around him. And I know he's athletic and he makes plays with his feet. Mahomes and Allen are just as dangerous with their feet as Lawrence is with his. And it's all in the same number of games. And I just don't see a quarterback who is growing in a way that would suggest he's going to live up to all of his arm talent. Does he have more sheer skill than Jared Goff? Yeah, I don't think anyone would dispute that. But again, in the NFL, it's a results business. And I'm taking the guy that has 94 touchdowns to 36 picks over the past 3.5 seasons over the guy with very pedestrian numbers.
I might get voted off the island by our fan base because your take is going to be more popular with this fan base. Yeah. I'm still taking Lawrence, but the fact that it is even a discussion is crazy. I mean, it's crazy. I can't get over, one, the 5 years, and two, I think there's probably something to be said, and Lions fans and former Lions players should certainly be able to relate. Like, how much has Jacksonville and being in that culture and, you know, impacted, I think, Lawrence from reaching his potential? Obviously had a really nice season in 2022, the 25 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. And it's been downhill the last 2 years. Yeah. And this year has been troubling. And I question the you said good receivers around him. I don't think it's a particularly good set right now. I like,
yeah, that's fair. Not
the,
right now.
The rookie looks really good, but you know, I laughed earlier. It'll probably show up if this thing gets uploaded on YouTube. But when I dropped the line about them spending all that money on wide receiver, like, did I just unearth the problem for their franchise? Like, they overpaid a ton for Christian Kirk. They overpaid for Zay. You know, I don't remember exactly what they traded for Ridley, but they gave up a draft asset. Like,
got a good year out of him, though.
Yeah, for sure. But then you let him go, and so it's like, what was the point? You know that, I'll admit, they probably expected a little bit more consistency than they got out of him last year. But you know, Lawrence has had multiple offensive coordinators. Everything I've read, Press Taylor, not very popular in the Jacksonville area. They think he's holding their quarterback back, and you know, very well could be a Jim Bob Cooter situation down there. I don't know, but look, I think Lawrence's upside is significantly higher, and I don't know. Like, Jared Goff is a good quarterback, and you know, somebody brought up the idea that he might be a system quarterback last year, and he's like, well, I've been a really good system quarterback in a lot of systems, and like, but he does have everything perfect around him right now. And I think that's maximizing his potential. I think in a vacuum, I still take Lawrence, but again, if the fact that we're having the conversation almost feels silly.
Yeah. I think one of the underrated pieces in Jared's game is the pre-snap adjustments and the diagnosing of a defense that he does, like, often in concert with Frank Ragnow. And again, as you referenced, like, I haven't watched enough Jaguars football and Lawrence football to know whether that's
probably better
that
off
that has held him back. Yeah, no, I still can see. I have two working eyes, but I, you know, Jared's ability to be the point guard of the offense, as he calls himself, is huge. And it's one of the reasons the Lions have been such a smooth operation now for 3 years running under Ben Johnson. And you know, that's an underrated element of playing quarterback in the NFL. That the easy assessment is to go to the arm and then to go to the feet. And then to go to the accuracy, and Jared checks maybe like one and a half of those boxes. But the other piece of it that every great quarterback has to have is that mental ability to read a defense and to read the field and to play in rhythm with his receivers. And I just think Jared does that so well. And I'm going to probably speak out of both sides of my mouth here and saying that when I do watch Lawrence, I just feel like I see him sail throws and miss throws that a guy of his caliber shouldn't be missing. And it just through 3.5 seasons, a player with that much talent to me should be just a little bit scheme proof or a little more capable of overcoming whatever coaching issues might be holding him back. But we said that about Stafford for 13 years here, and then he got in the right situation and won a Super Bowl. So it does depend a lot on your circumstances, and Jared's are obviously favorable in Detroit.
I just looked at the line on this game.
Yeah. Is it 13.5 still?
It's 13.5 points.
My Lord.
Look, I'm fast forwarding our conversation to the picks because I can't do it. I can't talk Jacksonville. I don't want to pretend like there's 0% chance that they win this game because it's obviously any given Sunday in the NFL. But man, this would be a real bad loss for the Lions if they can't get it done against. Yeah. Oh, we're talking all this Trevor Lawrence talk. He's not even playing. Yeah. He might not play again this year. Yeah. You need to watch Mac Jones this weekend. Look, I did watch some Jaguars football last Sunday.
I did too.
And I regret every second of it. That game was ugly.
Right,
and
down to the way it ended.
Yeah, for yes. And you know, I don't, what did Mac Jones throw for, like 122 yards, two picks?
Yeah,
14-22.
His best like Tim Boyle in Cleveland impersonation.
I mean, those were some bad football memories, let's yeah. be honest. And so I it's really tough to see a way that the Jaguars come into this town, a team that's going to be very eager to put last week's game behind them. I think they're going to be really focused on efficiency and kind of running up and down the field smoothly throughout this game. And I mean, we're more likely to see a repeat of the 40-14 result in 2022 than the Jacksonville threatening to win this game.
So remember our new policy here on this show. We know
how many
pick the spread. We pick how many you would need to take the Jags. How many would you need, Justin Rogers, to take the Jags on Sunday?
17.5.
Yeah. I think if you offer me 17.5, I'm taking the Lions. I think that.
How many do you need there? Name your spread.
Demonic. I would take the Jags at 20 and a hook, but I need the hook. I'm taking 20.5 and I'll happily take the Jags, and I'll probably still be ducking for half the game waiting for the Lions to hang 55 on them. You know, if the Lions win on Sunday, by the way, they will have won 8 games in a row, and we're at the point now where every week they do something they haven't done either ever or in like 70 years or 80 years. And usually it's
that. Give it to me.
Usually it's Greg Maiola who comes up with all these great tidbits of things they haven't done ever. If they win 8 games in a row on Sunday, it'll be their longest single season winning streak since their first year as actual Detroit Lions in 1934, after they relocated from Portsmouth, Ohio, as the Spartans. They started that year 10-0, and boy, was this town in for a surprise over the next 70 years. That set a very unrealistic bar for the Detroit Lions. But they, if they do, and I'd be shocked, obviously, if they don't, we're talking about this team doing something that it hasn't done since 90 years, and not since They were literally in their inaugural year in their current iteration.
What was the recent season I did a little historical look back on the 62 Lions? Do I need to do a historical look back on the 1934 Lions?
They crumbled down the stretch, finished 10-3.
Oh, no.
Ceded the NFL title to, I believe, Cleveland, who we just mentioned. So hopefully this team is on a better track than that one.
Look at your knowledge of archaic NFL history.
Just wasted brain space.
I think Greg's a listener of the pod.
We had to give Greg a shout out. Anytime you guys see all those great tidbits and factoids from Lions PR on Twitter or X, that is none other than Greg Maiola. He digs up the good stuff.
Have you heard Nolan Bianchi's nickname for Greg? This might be new to Greg. He just calls him Greggy Stats, and I feel like
I love it.
I mean, that's a perfect hockey-esque nickname, and
that's perfect. Greggy Stats.
Greg didn't realize he had a whole segment coming on this show, but here we go. You got anything else?
No, I got nothing. I thought I had nothing going into this, and somehow we managed to talk about the Jags and the Lions for 45 minutes. So
yeah, we turned this into an hour-long podcast.
Leave you with that factoid.
All right, then. Well, we will, as always, thank our producer, Zach Clark, who does a fantastic job, and will edit out all of Will's naughty words in this podcast.
Blame New Orleans.
Yeah. This podcast can be found on not all, but most podcast platforms. I learned that YouTube Music's out of the question, and maybe saying that is also going to get edited out, but whatever. Odyssey app, of course, free. Spotify, Apple, you know, all the big guns. You can find us on there. Download, like, rate. Will's work can be found at 971theticket.com.
We do right.
But not on Wednesdays. We always fall so far behind for this. But, you know, we're kind of enjoying doing it. And, you know, you can find my stuff on my baby, Detroit Football Network, at DetroitFootball.net.
Go give that thing a bottle.
Yeah, for Will Birchfield, I'm Justin Rogers. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
We'll be right back.